You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. So the question this hour is, how might we live now? Taliesin Preservation has been thinking about this question a lot. Taliesin is a rural lab on Frank Lloyd Wright's 800-acre estate in Spring Green. And so they rounded up a bunch of creative people, architects, chefs, writers, artists, farmers, artisans, all to ponder this question, how do we live now? We're tapping into two of their thinkers today, asking you the same question around food. And if you're in the food industry, let's hear from you. What are you anticipating will change about your career and your livelihood? What will you do? It's 800-642-1234. Patrick Hugh is a multiple James Beard Award-winning restaurant critic, formerly for the Los Angeles Magazine. He's worked in restaurants as a cook and now manager. Patrick, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much, Kate. Delighted to be here.
And Andy Hatch is here as well, co-owner of Uplands Cheese in Dodgeville and maker of the renowned Pleasant Ridge Reserve and Rush Creek Reserve cheeses. Andy, welcome to you.
Thank you, Kate.
Well, Andy, you make farmstead cheese, so the cheese you produce is from the milk you collect on your farm. Is that right?
That's exactly right. We have a dairy farm halfway between Dodgeville and Spring Green, so about 45 miles west of Madison and just a few miles down the road from Taliesin.
So how does your farm operate, and how do you take a holistic approach?
Well, we're a little bit unusual in the scope of Wisconsin cheesemaking in that we only use the milk from our own cows to make cheese. Most cheese factories in Wisconsin will buy milk from multiple farms, commingle it, probably make multiple styles of cheese year-round. And instead, we use only our own milk and actually only make cheese during the summer months while our cows are on fresh pasture. So we've taken that approach really to try to make a cheese that emphasizes the flavor of our farm itself, to make a more distinctive cheese and to control quality all the way through the process, the breeding of the cows, the feeding of the cows, the entire life cycle that continues through aging the cheese on our farm and then ultimately handling all of the sales and distribution.
It sounds like there is a tempo to your work. There is a natural tempo. Patrick, what draws you to artisans like this who really work with the craft of the food?
Well, I think craft is the important word. Well, in the case of Uplands, I mean, just this magnificent opportunity to see what something seemingly simple, the level of nuance that can come from something seemingly simple. So as Andy said, incredible milk, and then just the right practices in terms of the cheese making, and then sort of the X factor, which is time, and what happens as these two things combine and mature. And when you taste, a little bit of Pleasant Ridge Reserve that's young, it tastes one way. And when it's a few months later, it tastes a different way. And I've had the great privilege of walking through the aging rooms with Andy of at Uplands, and the difference in the cheeses, depending on their age, is absolutely astonishing. So this is really the nuance of the artisan craft.
Andy, there must be so much attention to detail.
There is, and I think that's why we only make two cheeses and different cheeses during different parts of the year, so we can concentrate on those types of details. And particularly making cheese the way we do with a single herd only in one season when the cows are on pasture, the raw materials are variable and changing, and that keeps you on your toes. But when you can work that closely with a particular source of milk, you can tease out of it complexities that might not, be easily accessible through larger scale processes. And so that's what appeals to me. I'm a detail-oriented tinkerer. People ask me if I get bored making just one cheese, but I find it fascinating to look that closely.
Now, you make two. You can you can say, come on.
The holiday cheese, it's almost more like Christmas cookies or something. It's just a little treat at the end of the season, but you're right. Thank you.
We are examining food this hour, how the pandemic may alter how we approach eating. We're joined by Andy Hatch, their co-owner of Uplands Cheese, and we have Patrick Q with us, author and restaurant manager. Do you seek out products that are made in small batches or made with care by a local artisan down the road? What does that mean to you? And farmers, has the pandemic made you consider more local markets for your products? We're at 800-642-1234 to join in. Email ideas at WPR.org. Andy, you didn't have to do it this way. You didn't have to make cheese this way. Why did you and your business partner decide to farm and make cheese through this process?
Well, I suppose we didn't know any better. I mean, I think it's useful to recognize that neither of us grew up on farms, which puts us obviously at a certain disadvantage. But I actually think gave us a great advantage in that we were able to see things from a fresh perspective. So many farming and cheesemaking operations are multi-generational, and as important as that is to transfer knowledge and pride, it can also, I think, create a set of blinders when looking towards the future. They're very habit-forming. It can be very isolating occupations, and oftentimes you keep doing things a certain way because you've always done them that way. And so I think, arriving with a fresh set of eyes was really useful for us, and we try to keep that perspective and not simply assume that we ought to continue doing things the way they've always been done.
Patrick, you're in a very large city, Los Angeles, where it's very, very early right now. and you can't look out your window to see farms, I would imagine. And
no.
Farms are many miles away. A dairy farm may be many miles away from you. How do you, as a restaurant manager and involved so long in restaurants, how do you keep that connection to agriculture and to the local farm through what you see coming into your restaurant?
Well, I think the connection really is the key part of it. And, yes, I can't see farms or anything like that, but a product certainly transports you, the right product, the right flavor, that sort of spark of something you haven't tasted before, or the nuance transports you to that place, to that farm. But I think the way to look at it is we're the market. We're, this city with millions of people, and every city like it, it's the market. And it sort of brings out what I've always felt about the artisanal movement. Long before it meant small production, it meant independence. And this goes back to, pre-revolutionary days with coppersmiths in Philadelphia. There was a level of independence that was gained by being an artisan. And I always sort of return to that as the key definition, because the artisan movement has become sort of complicated by the scale definition. How big are you? How small are you? Are you small enough to be an artisan?
Yeah.
And I think that's a secondary conversation. And so sitting in Los Angeles or in a restaurant or ordering a cheese board in a restaurant, I'm contributing to that farm, that artisan.
Lou, you have to pause there. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're pondering a complex question here in the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and the question is, how do we live now? We're looking at this through the lens of food. The pandemic disrupted our country's food supply chain and temporarily shut down the restaurant industry. And as this happened, did you make adjustments? Did you reevaluate your food sources? How do you prepare your meals now? How do you think about communal eating spaces? Share your thoughts with us, 800-642-1234. We have Patrick Hugh, a restaurant manager in Los Angeles, who has an affinity for artisans, especially cheesemakers. And Andy Hatch is here, makes Farmstead Cheese near Dodgeville, co-owner of Uplands Cheese. They stay with us. So, Andy, what are you hoping to achieve by working with chefs and farmers through Taliesin?
Great question. I mean, I've felt connected to Taliesin for a long time as country neighbors and as, you know, an admirer of what they're doing there with the buildings and with the land. As you know, it's an active farm. And then more particularly, over the last few years, they've started a food artisan program in which they bring young, aspiring, or already practicing chefs onto the campus for the summer season. And those food artisans help operate their on-site cafe while also developing relationships with local farmers like us and learning how to run a restaurant that has direct connections to farms, how to source through a regional local food system as opposed to, say, you know, just pulling product off of a catalog of a distributor. And I think that's been a really exciting project. It's in its early years, but I've been working closely with them to try to make that as successful as we can, because I think all of us, the farmers in the area, we have a lot of wonderful food producers in Dodgeville, Spring Green area, and I think Taliesin could really become an important focal point for food coming out of the Driftless area, and in particular, a place for people to come and visit and taste our food and see our farm and landscape and get in touch with you know, what's really a pretty special regional farming and artisan food hub in Wisconsin.
It sounds like relationships are just as important as business partnerships and business sources here.
Yes, and I think, you know, that's a characteristic of certainly the artisan cheese community and in a larger way the food community, and not just, you know, neighbors down the road, but I consider, you know, Patrick a friend and colleague since we met years ago, and he's, you know, what, 2,500 miles away, but food connects us, and that's a special part about food, and I think we've seen that through the pandemic in particular. You know, food has the ties were snapped in some ways, and we really felt that loss. And now, as we kind of reweave that web, that interconnected web of a food system, we have a chance to refocus on those connections and what they mean for our lives.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Andy Hatch, who co-owns a farm and a creamery that produces cheese. Patrick Hugh has written books on artisan food and beverage creation. You can join in. As the pandemic disrupted food systems, have you made adjustments? Do you reevaluate your food sources and where they come from? How do you prepare your meals or think about communal eating spaces? Share your thoughts with us, 800-642-1234. Patrick, I want to go inside restaurants with you and what you're seeing happening, whether it's at your own restaurant or restaurants down the street or across the country, as the pandemic has caused them to close and some of them closing again. What does that mean for these restaurants?
Well, it's been an economic moment of truth for many restaurants. The restaurants that were just hanging on are gone. The restaurants that were vital have our GoFundMe link. It's been a real moment of truth, but it's sort of, the restaurant business was already undergoing really structural changes. There's a big conversation going on about minimum wage, huge conversation going on about kind of wage inequality, I guess, between front of the house and back of the house. So servers traditionally earning more than cooks. The role of technology has just become larger and larger in terms of its ability to keep people out of dining rooms. And then the restaurant business, which is sometimes a very modest mom and pop business, is now in the same business as companies that have billions of dollars in valuation, you know, app companies, the Grubhubs of the world. So what's the restaurant business is just trying to figure out, well, what is an economically viable way forward? But yes, the reality was in the middle of March, we closed, like every other restaurant in the country, essentially. We were able to transition to takeout. Not every restaurant is able to do that pivot. You can't just snap your fingers and become a takeout restaurant. We were able to do that. We delivered two meals a day to three local hospitals for the last 14 weeks. So we've tried to play our role in the community. But at the end of the day, a restaurant is a business. And now that business is servers and managers walking around with masks and gloves and having all sorts of new protocols of table distancing. And it's kind of scary in a way. What does the future hold? How much will people value that lyrical moment that you mentioned of being in a restaurant and it representing the best of your community, the best of your relationships? You know, this magical moment when the grandkid is leaning their head against their grandparents' shoulder in a restaurant, the place where people are holding hands across a table. You know, we're a lyrical business and we are just business, you know, and both of them have certain responsibilities and certain pressures.
I think you had mentioned, too, that this is where loyalty comes in. And this is where if you support your local businesses, how are you thinking about your community restaurants, the people who make food all around you? What does loyalty, Patrick, mean right now?
You know, loyalty is so important, Kate. I mean, we live in a world where a lot of people go to a restaurant once, take their Instagram shot, and they move on to the next restaurant. And you are having you're shortchanging yourself when you do that about what a restaurant can be, because there are these bonds that are created when you are a loyal repeat guest of a restaurant, when you know the menu, when you know the idiosyncrasies of the place, you know, when the barkeeper can nod at you as you walk in, when the server knows you don't like anchovies on your Caesar. You know, I mean, it's a relationship. It defines a community and bonds between people. It invigorates downtowns. It does so many things, but loyalty is the key part. And of course that a restaurant can't expect loyalty. You have to earn loyalty. So that's hard work. That's every day, you know, representing the best values of your business. But the customer, the guest, is the one who chooses where to go to. And I just, I guess I get a little frustrated with I got there once, I took the picture, and I'm on to the next place, because I don't feel you're actually participating in the critical way that a guest does get to participate in making a viable restaurant.
There's nothing viable to make community or relationships from one visit. Andy, how has the pandemic affected your farm and creamery in the past few months?
It has been a shock to the system, and you know, in the form of a dramatic and instant loss of sales, reduction of income beginning in mid-March. And that's been difficult to deal with. I think it could have been worse. The seasonal rhythms of our business and the seasonal rhythms of our expenses and income and cash flow are such that the timing actually could have been a lot worse. Mid-March, we're still coming out of hibernation mode. We're not yet milking cows, making cheese. We haven't, you know, brought back seasonal staff and started spending a lot of money. And so we were able to sort of keep all of these stressful issues, managing people safely, managing cash flow a little bit in front of us, as opposed to an in the moment panic. And so that was a little bit lucky, but we're still trying to navigate our way through this. We're in the midst of our cheese making season now, and are producing as if there are sales are going to return to normal, which is a question none of us is really in a position to answer. So it's unnerving. We age our Pleasant Ridge Reserve for about a year before we sell it. So we're making cheese now to form our income for next year, and hard to know what next year is going to look like.
Andy Hatch makes two award-winning cheeses near Dodgeville. Patrick Q, a longtime food critic, now restaurant manager in Los Angeles. And you, what are you anticipating will change about your line of work? For better or worse, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update here on the Ideas Network. We're pondering a question this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and the question is, how might we live now? We're looking at this through the lens of food, and it's complex. As states allow restaurants to reopen, service workers are at high risk. There's the risk of sickness against that of losing your source of income. How much disruption can an independent business take? How do you carry out your livelihood and keep your employees and customers safe, or as safe as possible? And what is possible? 800-642-1234. We have Andy Hatch, co-owns, operates a farm and creamery in Dodgeville. And Patrick Q is a restaurant manager and the author of Finding the Flavors We Lost. It's a book that explores the cultural demand for artisanal foods. And they stay with us. Patrick, you touched on briefly technology and restaurants. What have you seen changing there with how technology is incorporated into restaurants?
I'm old enough to remember when a fax machine was a breakout technology, and a sous vide machine, which is sort of a plastic pouch thing, was a new culinary technology. But no, of course, the smartphone has changed everything. There's an app for every aspect of the restaurant business. People, all you have to do is punch in Italian restaurant near me, and you have a bunch of choices and a bunch of times. And within minutes, you've made your reservation for your party size. Sometimes I'm talking wine to people and they're looking at the retail price on their phone while I'm talking to them. So every aspect has changed. But in terms of the big thing is food that's taken out of the restaurant and sales that occur that are not consumed in the restaurant. And I don't want to make it too complicated, but in restaurants, your labor percentage is what you spend on labor divided by your sales. So spend $200 on labor, sell $600 worth of food, you've got a 33% labor charge. That's high. Everything you sell is going to lower your labor cost. And I think it's important when we're thinking of food apps like Grubhub, Uber Eats, etc. From the restaurant's point of view, that is sales that you can't fit into the restaurant, sales that you don't necessarily need additional staff for. So it's constantly lowering your labor cost. And the artisan connection is when a chef is able to lower their labor cost, they can increase their food cost. They can increase what they've spent in food. So they can buy the artisan cheese. They can support the artisan miller. They can spend more at the farmer's market. So I know it's early and we don't want to do all sorts of complicated math.
We love math.
I think it's important to look at a restaurant as an entity, one entity. And if they are lowering their labor cost through food apps, it's good news for the artisans of this world, because they can now spend more on other things. It just gives them that little wiggle room within the tiny fractions of wiggle rooms that restaurants have of being able to do something more. So it's all a web. It's, one can't just say, oh, apps, you know, terrible. They're destroying the restaurant business. I've heard that argument. It's not quite that simple.
But just because a restaurant is bustling with takeout doesn't mean that business is actually making it.
No, it's not. But as restaurants are constantly striving for efficiency.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the efficiency that you have to think. If you're lowering your labor costs, you are becoming a more efficient business. That doesn't mean firing people. That might mean employing more people. It's not about the number of people you're employing. It's about the percentage of how much does it cost you as a business to generate those sales. So, I've heard the argument oversimplified, and what I would like to see in the future is the apps, the Grubhubs, the DoorDashes, become more partners with restaurants rather than just mechanisms for taking out food, that it works in both, you know, works in their interests. There's something that is just not right about a business with a valuation in billions of dollars depending on somebody earning minimum wage to produce the goods. And that is the situation we're in at the moment. So I think the pandemic is going to allow us to have these bigger discussions about, okay, how does the restaurant business continue forward in a way that answers the divergent needs of all the stakeholders, landlords, owners, crew, purveyors, cheesemakers, you know, everybody who's involved in the restaurant business, but that there's a form of kind of integrity to the entire process.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is the big challenge as we move out of, hopefully move out of this phase.
Andy, as you look at your operating costs, the technology that you use on your farm, how does that factor into the whole craft of the artisanship of making cheese?
Efficiency is important to a restaurant, and it's obviously important to a manufacturer and dairy farmer. And of course, if you're producing a commodity product, in which case you're not in control of the price you're receiving, really your only way to make more money is to operate more cheaply. And of course, that is the environment in which most dairy farms have found themselves historically, and still do. And that's, you know, a race to the bottom of running as cheaply as you can, which can lead to various social, economic, environmental problems. The lifeline that direct marketing your own product, like as we do, the lifeline that can offer is that you can now be rewarded for quality, as opposed to being given a
quantity
generic. Yes, and so efficiency is still key to everything we do. But if in a case like ours, it cannot come at the sake of quality. So there are roles for some machines and a certain amount of automation, but For cheese making, as we approach it, there's got to be a skilled set of people involved. People are the main ingredient, as we like to say.
Mm. Talking with Andy Hatch, and a cheesemaker in Dodgeville, and author and food critic Patrick Kew in Los Angeles, we're looking at, in light of this global pandemic, how are you thinking about the changes you make in your life, at home, in your community, how you eat? What questions do you have about artisan food and beverage production, especially cheesemaking? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Patrick, do you see the trend of locally sourced food and knowing where your food comes from, artisan food and beverages, is that going to continue to grow?
I think it is going to continue to grow. It's just it's a compelling, you know, narrative that you know where your food came from. I think it's broadening out in terms of all sorts of people from different backgrounds are now sort of realizing what Andy was saying, you know, the quality, that quality is a way of defining yourself in the marketplace. I'm thinking of a man here in the farmer's market. He calls himself the Chori Man. He makes chorizo, Mexican, Sonoran style chorizo. He's had a great success doing it. So it cuts across. There's Vietnamese hot sauce. There's all sorts of things that are understanding quality will define you in the marketplace. I think it's very hopeful. Now we shouldn't be naive. You know, there's very large corporations who also understand this, and they've developed folksy packaging and kind of put nice old type fonts on things and wrap it in, you know, the crinkly, the right. It looks artisanal, but it's also, you know, conglomerate artisanal. So I think I respond to the lyricism of it. God knows I respond to the quality of it. But we also have to remain on our guard. Is the quality there? Is the nuance there? Is that little degree of, you know, what age does to a cheese, not filtering does to a wine, an old starter does to a bread? Is it there? And that's the real link that I hope to see grow more and more as we sort of, I keep saying it, but because I'm hopeful we move out of this moment.
Yeah, making sure that authenticity is still there.
Exactly. Yeah. The authenticity part is important.
Do you see that, Andy, that authenticity in the cheese that you make?
Well, it's certainly the North Star that guides us is to make cheese with a taste of place. I think I said this earlier in the program. We want to make cheese that tastes like our farm. And I think as important as it is for people to make food choices based on supporting their regional economy or supporting producers who operate in an environmentally responsible way, socially responsible way. The proof also has to be in the pudding, as Patrick said. It has to be delicious. And for us, that is what guides us. Together with, you know, principles around how we want to treat land and animals and our employees. But in the end, the proof still has to be in the pudding.
Dodgeville cheesemaker Andy Hatch there, and we have longtime food writer and restaurant manager Patrick Hugh. And you, how's the pandemic made you rethink how you live? Have you thought critically about how you work, relax, create, play? 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kant. Thanks for being here. A jump in COVID-19 cases in states around the country is causing restaurants that had opened after months of closure to close once again. And we're thinking this hour about how we approach food, what it means to gather and break bread and make bread. Still time for you. 800-642-1234. Andy Hatch is a farmstead cheesemaker near Dodgeville, and Patrick Hugh is a multiple James Beard Award-winning restaurant critic and now restaurant manager in Los Angeles. We heard from Janet in Camp Douglas, who writes in to ask, Andy, I'm opening a cheese store, and I'm wondering where and how to source good Wisconsin-made products, and is wondering, Janet's wondering, what's that first step?
Well, that's wonderful news, and wish you the best of luck. You are lucky, Janet, to be surrounded by not only cheesemakers, but companies that distribute cheese. So a quick Google search can identify, you know, some of these distributors. But I would also encourage you to reach out directly to cheesemakers like myself. most of us, especially small producers, are relatively easy to reach and always happy to help. Not just selling their own cheeses, but you know, another cheese shop in Camp Douglas is great news for all of us. So I think you'll find a lot of support with just a few emails.
I'm wondering, Andy, this ethic of how you go about making cheese, listening to the land, listening to the tempo of the whole process, how does that ethic carry through into other areas of your life?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I think somebody who's drawn to working the way I do with dairy farming and cheese making, you know, probably needs to have those sort of tendencies to begin with, which is a certain curiosity and you know, attention to detail. And so that spreads into other parts of my life, but it also requires certain counterbalance because, you know, you come home from spending all day thinking about deeply about your cheese making process. It can feel pretty good to just do something casually and let it rip a little bit. So I play music, and that's a wonderful way to get off the farm and do something entirely different. But
what do you play? Oh, I think we lost you there for a second. Are you there, Andy? Oh, I think we're having trouble there. Patrick, I'm wondering for you, do you worry at all about the pandemic causing your greatest talent to move away from the restaurant industry to pursue something else? Are you worried about losing your best and brightest creative people?
I'll just briefly say Andy plays bluegrass. I'm very good at bluegrass. Yeah, in restaurants, it's a very hard industry. The hours are very long. You often have, you know, arriving home very late at night, very tired, the demands and the pressure. I think people who enjoy, you know, bringing pleasure to people through food and the restaurant industry, they will, you know, overcome this dark moment and remain in the restaurant business. I think it's, I mean, I'm thinking of the line cooks, I'm thinking of the great servers, the food runners, everybody who, you know, contributes to making a great restaurant experience. I think, you know, for the owner, that's really the pandemic is maybe the reason they get out of the restaurant business. The numbers were already, you know, restaurant math was already very hard to pull off. And now restaurant math is all that much harder. From a restaurant's point of view, social distancing means losing half your customers. Of course, the reasons for social distancing are important, crucial, and supported by everybody. But the reality is half the customers. That's half the customers means half the staff. Half the staff, you know, it's that's why as we slowly restart, you know, it's always wonderful when we can make that phone call to somebody and say, hey, we've got enough business, come back. And you know, it reminds you of how important the work is. But I think the landscape will never be the same as it was before.
And certainly those relationships are so important in these times of distress. Andy, I think we lost you there for a moment, but I understand you do play bluegrass. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. Sorry about that, Kate.
No, that's okay. Well, Andy, I'm wondering for you, as you call around to your customers, what are they telling you, and how honest are those conversations? Not honest in the way of are they being honest with you, but are they opening up?
Yes, it's been, I mean, not to sound dispassionate, but it's been fascinating to see how everybody is experiencing the pandemic differently. By everybody, I mean, you know, restaurants, shops, retailers who sell our cheese, based on their different circumstances, and how quickly were they able to adjust and adapt and change direction? How loyal were their customers? How much capacity did their staff have to get behind new ideas? It's been all different. It'd be very difficult for me to identify a trend that accurately describes all of our customers. And I think what we see now is, optimism, but optimism coded in a cautious, fear for what might happen with a rebound.
And to think the cows on your farm would never know the difference that there is a pandemic.
That has actually been a very important part of our lives the last few months. When you step away from the desk and all of the confusing, overwhelming negativity, and see that cows and pastures have gone on according to those natural rhythms has been very reassuring.
I bet, yeah. Patrick, I'm wondering if you can leave us with a little hope. Anything that you see as a glimmer of optimism that keeps you going?
As Andy said, with the natural processes of a farm giving a sort of balance to the counterbalance, this period, this moment has reminded me of the connections. First of all, the fragility of the food, the restaurant business, the purveyors, just the economic fragility of this business we're devoting our lives to, but also the strength and resilience of the bonds that do exist and continue to be made, whether they be between staff members, whether they be between guests and staff, between communities and restaurants, between farms and retailers and cheesemakers and restaurants. And, you widen the scope and you widen the focus, and it's all a network of connections. And, when Andy says it all comes back to people, it does all come back to people. As I look for something hopeful we come out of this, it is that, a reminder of the incredible bonds that the food world is made up out of.
Patrick and Andy, thank you so much for joining us. Do take care.
Okay. Thank you so much, Kate.
Thanks, Kate.
Andy Hatch, co-owner of Uplands Cheese in Dodgeville, maker of the Pleasant Ridge Reserve and Rush Creek Reserve cheeses. Patrick Hugh, a James Beard Award-winning restaurant critic, author of the book Finding the Flavors We Lost. And they're associated with the Taliesin Preservation Community. You can find more on the question, how might we live now, at taliesinpreservation.org. And for disclosure, Taliesin is a business sponsor of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.